One Man's Family is dedicated to the proposition that the American family is the bulwark of the American nation, and that so long as family life as we know it thrives, this America will be a good place in which to live. Our story deals with the family of Henry and Fanny Barber. They themselves, their children, and their grandchildren. You're not going to meet all the family today, because, my goodness, there are 12 grandchildren alone, including one set of triplets and one set of twins. But you are going to meet some of the more important members. And to begin with, here is Father, Henry Barber himself, a retired stock and bond broker, a man with a truly green thumb in his garden, and a great advocate of the American family way of life, Father Barber.
Yes, yes. The good family, the happy child-parental relationship, is the true solution to most of the problems in the world today. When homes are loose and slipshod and parents are selfish and inattentive, there you will find juvenile delinquency, bad citizenship, and bad parents for the next generation. If we have an inordinate divorce rate today, then follow the trail back and you will find the reason in the homes of the generation before. If I were to tell you...
Now, Henry, that will do.
Yeah? Oh, Fanny, I've just begun.
And it's all very good, but this is not the time and place to say it.
Well, as you may surmise, that was Fanny Barber, the mother of the 5 Barber children and the grandmother of the 12 members of the younger generation. Please go right ahead, Mrs. Barber.
I'm very proud of my 5 sons and daughters. My eldest son, Paul, is my wise son and a strong right arm to the whole family. I'd like to introduce you to Paul. You know, he married in the First World War and lost his wife almost immediately afterwards. He's never married since and lived at home with his father and me. Come here, Paul.
Ah, yes. The fond mother.
Is that all you have to say?
Well, I might say this. Living as I do at the top of the family home in a studio of my own, I seem to be up where I am able to look out over the whole family and get a pretty fair perspective of family life and family relations. And maybe this sometimes gives me the opportunity of untangling a domestic snarl which those closer to it are unable to divine.
Yes, Paul, I think it does. Introduce Hazel next, don't you think?
Yes. Come here, Hazel. This is my eldest sister. She's now the wife of Daniel Murray, and they and their 3 youngsters live just 3 blocks down and 2 blocks over from the family home. Hazel, what do you have to say for yourself?
I just want to mention that I'm sorry that my husband, Daniel, isn't here on this occasion, but he's up at Sky Ranch today, and my 3 children, Hank and Pinky, the twins, and Margaret, my young daughter, at school. But you'll meet them all in the right time and right place, no doubt.
Thank you, Hazel. Now, Claudia, she and Clifford were born twins, too. Yes, they run in the family, apparently. You'll meet Clifford in a moment, but first Claudia, or rather, Mrs. Nicholas Lacey. She and her husband live 6 blocks straight down from the family home.
We certainly do, Paul. I suppose I should apologize also for not having my husband Nicky here, too. But like Hazel Daniel, Nicky likewise is up at the Sky Ranch. And my youngest daughter Penelope and Cliff's young son Skippy, who's like a son to Nicky and me, are at school, too. However, Joan's here. Joan's my 16-year-old daughter. Hi. I mean, that's I'm here. After all, where would a practical grown-up daughter be if not right in the middle of things? You know, sometimes I think it's a great big old hairy deal the way grown-ups try to push growing daughters around. But as long as it all comes out all right in the end, I guess it's okay.
Well, that's quite a speech.
Yeah, wasn't it? All right, now Claudia's twin, Clifford. Cliff's been married twice and has lost both wives. His first wife gave him one son, Skippy, who now has become a permanent part of Claudia and Nicky's family. Cliff hasn't been getting along so well of late. With himself or with the family?
Is that anybody's business but my own? For Pete's sake, Paul, does everyone all the time have to be throwing it up in my face? I suppose it's my fault I'm not a better father to Skippy. I suppose it's my fault.
Please, Cliff.
Well, you started it, I didn't.
I'm sorry.
Well, okay. Family, family, all the time up to your armpits and family.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. But as I say, that's Cliff at the moment. Now, my youngest brother is Jack. He just amazed himself and the rest of the family recently by cooperating with his wife, Betty, in producing triplets. Jack, what about that?
That's right. Abby, Debbie, and Connie.
Abigail, Deborah, and Constance, Jack.
Okay, if you want to be formal about it. Oh, yeah, this is my wife, Betty.
Hi. Don't forget our 3 older daughters.
How can you possibly forget them? You're talking about Elizabeth Sharon Ann, 6, Janie, 4, and Mary Lou, 2. The triplets are just new. Hardly used at all.
Silly.
Well, that's the Barber clan in the main. There are others whom you will know and get to like as much as the family themselves, but I think this is enough for now. Thank you, Paul. And now will you please play episode 7, book 69, as a typical example of a chapter out of the lives of one man's family. Then try episode 13, which jumps 8 chapters to give you a later preview of events to come. Thank you.
One Man's Family. One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today we present Chapter 7, Book 69, entitled Triplets and Redheads. Jack and Betty are living temporarily with their triplets, plus E. Sharon Ann, Mary Lou, and Janie. There is something doing every minute. Listen. Yeah, see what I mean? That's what is known as unison crying, and the triplets do it very well from time to time.
Huh, unison crying. I suppose that's supposed to be a joke.
Well, anyway, here it is, fairly late in the afternoon, up on the second floor of the family home in Mother Barber's sewing room. Betty's there, and so is 16-year-old Joan from Nikki and Claudia's.
Can you imagine that, Joan, making fun of the triplets?
Betty, I didn't.
Of course not, honey. Did you say you came over with your mother?
Yes, but Claudia went on out to the top of the house to see Paul.
Oh, that's it.
Isn't Grandmother around?
This is her afternoon at the sewing circle.
She'll be home pretty soon, though.
You look like you had a sewing circle of your own.
Oh,
I'm just sewing up some rips in the 3 older girls' dresses.
Well, I'd help, only I'm really lousy with a needle and thread.
So was I when I married Jack.
But you'll learn.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, sure you would.
When you gotta, you gotta.
That's what I can't stand. Anything you have to do.
But Joan, that's all life is. Doing things that have to be done.
That's awful.
No, it isn't. Not really. The challenge. What good is it to be alive if you're not worth anything? I mean, just sitting around breathing up the air and eating up the food and doing nothing in return is sheer waste.
Waste of good air and good food, huh?
Sure it is. People who don't pull their share are just a burden and in the way.
But there are plenty of things in the world to do that you enjoy doing, without being stuck with hateful things.
Oh, that's just a little girl talking.
You think I'm a little girl?
Oh, no, not in lots of ways. You've got a gorgeous figure, and every time I look in your face, I feel more rather like an insignificant small-town girl compared to you.
Really? I make you feel that way?
Uh-huh, just like Claudia always has.
But if I'm all that, why did you say little girl when I said there were plenty of things to do, leaving out the disagreeable ones?
There's a disagreeable side to the very best a girl can hope for.
Oh, I don't know. What about being a rich man's wife?
He wants you to do things you won't like doing.
Well, just suppose I find a rich man who'll let me do what I want to all the time.
There ain't no such critter.
Okay, maybe I'll have a business career then.
Oh, golly. You think husbands are hard to get along with, you should see a boss.
Yeah, I'd get a boss who liked me.
No boss likes a girl in his office unless she's good at her job. A girl may be the prettiest thing in sweater and skirt. She'll get blasted to kingdom come 100 times a day if she can't do her job.
Well, there must be some place in the world where a person can do what he wants to do and be what he wants to be.
Maybe you think being an old maid would be fun.
If I can do what I want to do.
That's just cutting off your nose to spite your face. I'd rather be the very meekest of housewives, with a man to hold me in his arms in the dark hours of the night, than be the smartest, most glamorous, most independent female in the world, with that small, gnawing fear of loneliness in the dark, with the knowledge that nobody cared.
Maybe you're the wifely type.
All women are the wifely type. Women need men just exactly as much as men need women. That's the one thing I keep praying for with our 6 daughters. Happy marriage for each. Believe me, I'm not just sitting down praying either. I'm doing my doggonedest to mold them into girls who will be lovable and desirable, and who in turn can accept love and modify their lives to include a man when the right one comes along.
You really believe in marriage, don't you?
You bet I do. And it's just cheap, smart talk to say anything else.
Hello, Betty.
There he is. In Mother Baby's sewing room, Jack. We'll talk some more, Joan, if you like.
Yes, I'd like to. Maybe I've been missing something I didn't know about.
Hey, look what I've got.
Oh, one of the triplets.
Hey,
who's that?
You mean to say you don't recognize Miss Abigail, honey?
Not unless I look at the dog tag on her ankle. How are you, Miss Abigail, honey?
Miss Abigail, honey, this is your cousin Joan.
What do you call her?
Miss Abigail, honey, that's something Nicoletta's added. We now have Miss Abigail, honey, Miss Deborah, honey, and Miss Constance, honey.
Miss Abigail,
honey. Oh, you don't say so. Well, you don't have to bubble, do you?
Of course she has to bubble, don't you, Abby?
Yes, hello.
Boy, have you got a wet kisser. Here, let me wipe your lips.
Careful, Jack. Anyway, what are you doing home from the office at this time in the afternoon?
Oh, a slow day, so I dropped by to see how my little family's doing.
Huh, little family, he says.
Would you like to hold Abby, Joan?
Is it okay?
Oh, sure.
Put the blanket under you, Jack.
That's right. Don't forget the blanket and rubber sheet.
Oh, really?
There you are.
Hi. What are you doing again? Here, I'll wipe her mouth.
Abby of the wet kisser.
Jack, don't say that.
Well, that's nothing to what the boys will say. Uh-oh, here comes Wet Smack Abigail.
Jack, that's horrible. Hey, Abby, don't encourage your father.
She isn't. She just likes her cousin Joan.
And I like her. You do?
Uh-huh.
Quick, Jack. Aren't you, Miss Abigail?
What's going on in here?
Hi, Dad.
Come on in, Father Barber.
I'm on my way up to see Paul.
Claudia's up there right now.
Oh, I didn't see you, Joan. Well, how are you, Jack?
Oh, fine. Do you know which one of your new granddaughters I'm holding?
Yes, it's Abigail, of course.
Father Barber, how did you know?
Of course I know my grandchildren.
That's some kind of shenanigan, Dad. Even Betty and I can't tell for sure yet.
It is Abigail, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
That's wonderful. How do you do it?
Simplest thing in the world.
Well, tell us.
I have no intention of telling. Fine couple of parents who can't distinguish their children. Here, Joan, let me take Abby.
Oh, careful, Dad.
Don't always be saying careful to me. Come on, Abby, child. Cheerful countenance, young lady. Bright and cheerful. I'm the one who can tell you apart. Abby, this is your grandfather.
Dad, you better give it back to me.
I'll flicker.
A tragedy. Turned against by my triplet grandchildren.
Give them a little while, Father Barber.
Sure, they'll be eating out of your hand in no time.
Tragedy. I've lived all these years a greatly admired man, only to be scorned in my twilight years by my own flesh and blood.
Don't go in there.
I'll go up and get psychoanalyzed by Paul. That's what I'll Paul, are you in there?
Oh, our father.
Come on in, Dad. Don't stand on ceremony.
Yes. Oh, you too, Claudia.
Sure. Come join the conclave. Paul provides all the comforts of home for his guests.
Well, George, Paul, all those women down on the second floor are completely spoiling those secrets.
Oh, yes. Sit down. What's happened now?
Why, I can't touch one of those youngsters without her setting up such a yowling. You'd think I was murdering her before her very eyes.
Poor Dad.
I'll have you know that Abby, Debbie, and Connie are being completely ruined before they're among those.
And to what do you attribute their ruination?
Obvious. Perfectly obvious.
Namely?
Women.
Women?
Women.
Well, you'll have to be a little more explicit.
Women to the right of them, women to the left of them, women morning, noon, and night. No wonder they don't behave themselves in the presence of their grandfather. Men are strange, frightening objects. All they know is women.
That's a doggone ingenious theory. May I be the first to congratulate
you? And none of your flippancy, young man.
But there are not so many women. What are you talking about?
The mother, Betty, to begin with.
Would you deny the triplets their mother?
Their grandmother, Fanny, as mother? Nicolette Moore?
Granted.
Mrs. Kettleman?
Oh, now, Dad, Mrs. Kettleman.
Yes, Mrs. Kettleman. She's a Tartar, a woman with a will of cast iron. No wonder her husband died, a broken man. She beat him to death with her cast iron will.
What a terrible thing to say.
Well, she's not going to beat me down because my will is just as strong as hers. And I'll give her blow for blow from now until kingdom comes.
Well, I got you and Mrs. Kelvin, and we're beginning to like each other.
How can you like a woman who walks around behind you with a broom sweeping her footprints off the living room floor as fast as you make them? Well, never mind about Mrs. Kelvin. I'll settle her hash. And now, I came here to ask you about Clifford, Claudia.
Oh, why, he's all right.
Yeah, that's not what I mean, and you knew it.
Oh, but look, Dad.
Paul, she's undoubtedly told you.
Well, I don't think so, Dad.
She didn't tell you that Clifford drove off in a big green convertible the other afternoon with a chit of a girl with flaming red hair?
Well, that's so.
You didn't know?
No.
At least you know her name by this time, Claudia.
Oh, yes, Roberta Evans. Roberta Evans. That's all I know.
Didn't Clifford say anything?
He said absolutely nothing, Dad. All he offered the next morning was her name. Just said, I suppose you're curious who the girl was who picked me up last night. Her name was Roberta Evans. Then he walked out of the room.
Was he out late with her?
Dad, Clifford's a grown man. Besides, how would I know? Nikki and I went to bed at 10 o'clock and we both slept like tops.
Mm-hmm.
And don't look so put out.
Secrets, always secrets. I suppose it would kill somebody to tell me something once in a while.
But I don't know,
Dad. Because I've given birth to a whole nest full of deaf mutes.
Oh, don't be unreasonable.
Not unreasonable. Why should Clifford be sneaking off with a red-headed girl?
May I suggest why?
Well, do so.
Same reason he's resentful towards the family. Same reason he didn't want to take his share of your and Mom's estate. Same reason he's down on me at the moment.
Yeah.
It's rebellion. It's anger at himself for not living up to what he thinks the family expects of him. He's trying to prove to himself that he can make a life for himself completely outside the family circle.
Paul, I think you're very close to something.
The big green convertible and the flashing red hair sounds in complete contrast to the pretty staid, conservative Barber family. Flashy, daring, unconventional. He's choosing a girl as opposite to what the family stands for, as he can find.
Huh? You mean that girl's no better than she should be?
Oh, Dad, please. I don't have the least knowledge of her. I'm just surmising.
Well, I'm not. I'm saying it. Roberta Evans is no better than she should be, and I may take it upon myself to tell Clifford so.
Dad, no.
I will. I'll tell him so in so many words.
Just heard episode 7, book 69 of One Man's Family, written and produced under the direction of Carlton E. Morse. Chapter 8, entitled Clifford Stands Up to His Father, will come to you tomorrow at this same time.